Welcome this morning. This morning we continue our look at the Psalms, a few of the Psalms, and today we're going to be looking at Psalm 2. And Psalm 2 begins with a question. And the question is, why do the nations rage and why do people imagine a vain thing? What we're going to be looking at today is how this question frames the experience of those who are engaged in the spiritual disciplines of self-examination and repentance. So the Psalms very much describe our inner states of life as we progress in the spiritual walk. And so they are a rich source of understanding for us, of understanding our own states, the way that we feel, the way that our thoughts sometimes run away with us and capture us and drive us down into lower things. And so the story of the Psalms is all about being lifted out, being lifted up to what is of the Lord and leaving behind what is of the loves of self and the love of the world. So this psalm really gives us insight into this process of putting off the old and putting on the new. And so we're going to explore that this morning. So we're reading this morning is Psalm 2, reading the whole psalm, verses 1 through to 12. Why do the nations rage and the people plot a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed. Let us break their bonds in pieces and cast away their cords from us. He who sits in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall hold them in derision. Then he shall speak to them in his wrath and distress them in his deep displeasure. Yet I have set my king on my holy hill of Zion. I will declare the decree. The Lord has said to me, you are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will give you the nations for your inheritance, and the ends of the earth for your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron. You shall dash them into pieces like a potter's vessel. Now therefore be wise, O kings. Be instructed, you judges of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you perish in the way, when his wrath is kindled but a little. Blessed are all those who put their trust in him. In our reading from the teachings of the church this morning is from the work The Apocalypse Explained, reading number 175, part A. To have power in reference to over the nations means to scatter in reference to evils. Thus there is an adaptation of words to their subjects. It is said that evils will be scattered by the Lord, for the Lord scatters evils by means of truths. He first discovers them to man by means of truths, and when man acknowledges the evils, the Lord scatters them. The Lord alone does this. Nations and peoples are often mentioned in the word, and those who know nothing of the spiritual or internal sense of the word believe that peoples and nations are to be understood. But peoples mean those who are in truths, or in the contrary sense, those who are in falsities, and nations, those who are in goods, or in the contrary sense, those who are in evils. And as such are meant by peoples and by nations, so abstractly from persons, peoples means truths or falsities, and nations, goods and evils. For the true spiritual sense is abstracted from persons, spaces, times, and like things that are proper to nature. So as we mentioned, the second psalm opens with a question, and this is a question that is asked by those who are in the spiritual life, who are practicing these disciplines that our doctrines instruct us are necessary in order for us to be in a spiritual life. And so it's a question that we perhaps have asked many times. Why do the nations rage, and why do the people imagine a vain thing? Now, this question actually comes out of the struggle to live a life in keeping with what the Word teaches. As soon as we set ourselves to make an effort to have what is spiritual rule over those habitual ways of feeling and thinking that belong to the natural man, then things are stirred up within us. Things that seek to keep in place our false sense of self bound to selfish ways of being. When we choose not to walk in the counsel of the ungodly, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of the scornful, as is discussed last week in Psalm 1, when we do this with a view to opening up new possibilities for our life through walking, standing, and sitting in the light of the Lord's Word, then all that is opposed to the Lord begins to stir up. We enter into a battle to let go of the old and enter into the new. Negative emotional states begin to be stirred up within us, and patterns of thought that stand against those promptings that the Lord is making for us to change our life for the better. These are the nations and the peoples mentioned here. At times we can feel swamped and lost in the midst of this battle. We find that there is a part of us that seeks, desires, and wants change. A part of us that wants to be rid of defensive ways of relating to other people. Part of us that wants to be freed from negative emotional states. But no sooner, it seems, than we acknowledge the need to make positive changes in our life, we are once again caught up in habitual responses, unwanted feelings that dominate our states of life. Negative self-talk begins to babble away inside our headspace. Or as the psalmist put it, the inner nations rage, and we get dragged down into vain imaginings that populate or people our natural mind. So confronted with all this, we may well ask the question, why do the nations rage within us? And why does these thoughts represented by the people, why is it that we get caught up in vain imaginings when all we want is to live a life in obedience to the Lord's Word and to find that peace that He speaks about? Now the difficulty, of course, lies in the fact that while we may want to live more fully from the Word, the identity that we have constructed for ourselves through our life in this world is not interested in spiritual things. This identity that for much of our life we have called ourself is really a false persona that holds us in those things that are external, things that are and draws us away from the things of heaven. It calls the external things real, and it makes the internal things seem vague and unimportant. It is a self that places the importance in the world and the things of the world around us. And it keeps us identified with the worries and anxieties of this world. And so it prevents us from seeing that the real world, where changes have to take place as far as our eternal spiritual welfare is concerned, is the world within us. The world made up of our beliefs and those attitudes and values that so cloud out and dominate the natural man. Things that we have taken ownership of and believed to be who we really are. You see, this we can recognize this false persona because it is overly concerned with petty trivialities. It's concerned with getting its own way. It is constantly being offended. It loves to put itself above others. And it spends its time in mindless inner talk that has no grounding in what's truly important from an eternal perspective. And it is obsessed with its likes and dislikes. This self is constantly distracted by whatever is presenting in the moment, and as such has no real permanence. So it's not a true self at all. It is constantly shifting from one opinion to the next in an effort to get the most out of each situation it finds itself in. Spiritual truths found in the Lord's Word and the heavenly doctrines are given so that we can have built up within us a new, permanent, real sense of self grounded on what is substantial. Such a self can only be built up when it is founded on the truths of the Word, understood in the light of the heavenly doctrines. And if we have never seen the need for a new self, then we haven't seen the nature of this false persona we wear and call ourselves. When light from the Word does begin to reveal the state of a person's sense of themselves at that false level, then the evils and falsities of the natural man that make it up, they become disturbed, and they gather to resist any exposure to the Word that suggests that its existence is disordered and there is need for a change in life. This false persona is what is meant here by the nations that rage and the peoples that imagine vain things. And so we come to verse 2, which reads that the kings of the earth set themselves, yea, the rulers have plotted together against the Lord and his anointed. The kings of the earth that set themselves are false beliefs that form arguments that keep negative attitudes in place. Particularly when we are challenged by the Word to commit ourselves more fully to living a spiritual life. The rulers that take counsel together are the selfish attitudes that seek only their own interests, the interests of the false self, and blind us to seeing the need to persevere with the Word and use it as our guide for life. These elements, we are told, conspire against what is genuinely good and true. The divine good is what is meant by the term Lord, and the divine truth is what is meant by the term His anointed. And so the Lord and His anointed, or the divine good and the divine truth, together these are the Word. For it is the Word itself that is divine love and wisdom in human form. And as such, it alone is able to deliver us from the evils and falsities that make up this false self that we are so often identified with. This presence of the Lord in the Word, when it is being applied to life, this is the reason that the inner nations rage and the inner peoples imagine vain things. Verse 3 tells us what is required of us if we are to live a spiritual life. It says we are to break their bands in two and throw off their cords from us. Now, in some translations, including the New King James Version that you would have read along with this morning, this verse reads as if it is the evil and false speaking of breaking and throwing off the things of the Lord. And so one word has made it seem that way. The kings of the earth set themselves, yea, his rulers have plotted against Jehovah and his anointed. And then the translators add in the word, saying, we shall break their bands in two and throw off their cords from us. The word saying is not in the original. And so the heavenly doctrines point out, they make it very clear that what is said here is not said by the evil and false of the Lord, but is said of those who are being regenerated of evils and falsities. So in other words, it is saying that we are to break these bands and throw off these cords. So it speaks of bands and cords as those things that bind us up. In the prophet Isaiah, we are told that his true spiritual life involves loosing the bands of wickedness. Isaiah 58:6. To not be able to see that it is the word alone that is able to do this for us is to be lost in vain imaginings of our ego or proprium. But those who have looked to the word and see that when they are identified with their proprium, they are separated from the Lord, these are those who are able to experience the word's power to break those bonds that keep evils and falsities alive and active within their external man. The things of the natural man that make up the false persona are nothing but dust before the goods and truths of the word. But for us to see this so that it can have a real impact on the quality of our life, we have to be in the word as often as we can and be working with it daily in our life. If we are doing this, then we shall see that those things that seem to have so much power over us are in fact nothing in the face of the Lord's word. And this is the idea contained in the next verse, next two verses, which reads, he who sits in the heavens shall laugh, the Lord shall mock at them. Then he will speak to them in his anger, and he will terrify them in his wrath. Of course, we know that the Lord mocks no one, nor is he ever angry or wrathful. Such states of life are far beneath him who is perfect and unchanging in his love for the whole human race. This is said from the perspective of the evil and the false. For the evil and the false feel that they are mocked in the face of truth, for then they are exposed for what they really are. Similarly, divine love is experienced as anger by those that seek to do evil, for they are incapable of receiving into themselves the goodness that comes from love. And so when love approaches, it is felt as something negative and destructive of their life because it is opposed to the evil they love. States of mind that arise from evils and falsities are such that love is not experienced as something loving, but as its opposite, as something destructive, angry, and vengeful, because it seeks the opposite of what the evil find delightful. Such are the warped perceptions of the proprium in the face of the word and the heavenly doctrines. Psalm declares in verse 6 that the Lord has set his king on his holy mountain, on Zion. This king is the divine human of the Lord. And the divine human of the Lord is the word, for the word is the infinite divine presenting itself in a form that can be taken into finite human minds. The word is the Lord's divine human. It is said to be set on a mountain or Zion because the word is founded on and comes forth from divine love, which, being the highest or most elevated form of love, is described as a holy mountain. This truth is a remarkable statement if we give a little attention to it. The Word has the divine love as its foundation. And because it has the divine love as its foundation, it must give expression to that love, because it is from it. So how wonderful then are the truths of the heavenly doctrines that can make this truth ever clearer for us. Of the Word, the Lord declares in verse 7, "You are my Son, today I have begotten you." The term "today" spiritually means the perpetual moment, the now. It is every moment. For in every moment we are given the opportunity for a new beginning, to draw from the Word as our life, to draw divine truths born of love. These are called "my Son," which are born in the minds of those who seek the Lord, who love His Word and meditate upon it day and night. The psalm teaches us that those who are engaged in this spiritual work know what to ask for. This is because this kind of work develops a person's spiritual perceptions. And when we are more acutely attuned to the Word, we will hear the Lord's voice speaking through it, in our thoughts, in our conscience, in our meditations, saying, "Ask of me, and I will give you the nations as your inheritance, the uttermost parts of the earth as your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron, you shall dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Now then, be wise, O kings, be taught, O judges of the earth. Serve Jehovah with fear, yea, rejoice with trembling." So the Word instructs us here what it is we are to ask for. We are to ask for the nations as our inheritance and the uttermost parts of the earth for our possession. This, of course, speaks of the things within us, not of actual nations and parts of the earth in the external world. Our inheritance and possession is of a spiritual quality, and spiritual things are the internal things of the mind. So to ask this is to be in the effort to have the principles of the Word rule over all the emotional and intellectual states of our minds. To break them with a rod of iron is to live in the power of natural truths of the Word understood in the light of the heavenly doctrines. For these alone are able to break down false perspectives and the selfish motives that they contain. The false vessels that have been built up in the natural mind are able, by means of the Word, to be smashed into pieces. We are to serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. This means our lives are to be dedicated to what is good, and we are to confess or witness to what is true. To serve the Lord with fear doesn't mean to cower before Him. Rather, in the spiritual sense, it means to pursue only what is good or loving. And this pursuit, this desire, holds within it a holy fear of entertaining anything that would corrupt or destroy this good. And in the final verse, the very basis for a healthy spiritual life is revealed. If we seek wholeness, then we must, as verse 12 says, "Kiss the Son, lest He be angry and you perish in the way, when His wrath is kindled but a little." Oh, the blessing of all those who flee to Him for refuge, or blessed are those who trust in Him. The Son, as we have seen, is the Word, divine truths that come forth from the divine love. And to kiss another is to be joined to them intimately. Therefore, to kiss the Son is to have our life united to the truths of the Lord's Word. That part of us that is not responsive to the Word feels truths as something opposed to it, and this is described as anger, the Son's anger. God, when viewed through the proprium, is seen as something that resists what we want. Therefore, he is seen as a judge who holds us guilty and who seeks only to condemn us and take away our liberty and pleasure. And we can see this to some degree in the external world, to how people respond to the system of laws that form the basis for our society. Those who are law-abiding view the system very differently to those who have to face the consequences of their criminal behavior. But it is the same law that governs both. The laws of a just society exist for the good of everyone in that society. And when they are followed, they're not even noticed. A person feels free. However, when a first person breaks the law and is facing the consequences of their behavior, those authorities are often seen as exacting some kind of personal vendetta. Technically, the actions on the part of the authorities are not personal, in that they are obliged to act in accordance with the law when a criminal act has been committed. It is the evil committed that brings down the enforcement of the law. But unfortunately, those who love evil see the law as their enemy and cast it and those who enforce it on behalf of society rather than themselves as the real villain. So this illustration can help us to work with the Word where we read of anger, wrath, and vengeance being attributed to the Lord. For in all these occurrences, what is described is not the Lord's nature, but how what is lower in us sees the Lord when it is not allowed to do what it wants, when it feels restrained from those pleasures it seeks. To seek the Lord is to work to have the influence of these lower things broken in our lives, broken with that rod of iron, which is the Word understood in the light of the heavenly doctrines. This is the rod of iron that can break those things that bind our life up, that can shatter them like a potter's vessel. And so this happens for those who put their trust in the Word and lean not to their own understanding. So blessed indeed are those who flee to the Word for refuge. Amen.